After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
And it changed my life because it points to a way of being instead of telling me how to be or telling me what to do or how I should think or where I should, how, you know, it's more like, hey, you're a part of this river, the river's flowing, and you can either push the river, which we don't suggest, or you could flow with the river and understand the interdependent nature of all things and how the objective nature of reality actually works. And then you can define how you want to have a relationship with it.
Hey everyone, it's Raghu back with Mind Rolling. My co-host in the back there, Maya, is decided to take a nap. I don't know what to do about that because she's always with me. And I am happy to welcome David Block to the show. David, nice to have you here.
It's good to be here.
Going
to have myself here?
We'll check that out as we go through the show to see how much you've connected there. David was a man of many talents, but you all may know of him through his band Gone, Gone Beyond and The Human Experience. And we got a lot to talk about, but I just want to say, I don't know where you got the name for the band, but one of my favorite mantras from Tibetan Buddhism is Gate, Gate, Paragate, Parasamgate, Bodhiswaha. Is that where you got it? That means gone, gone beyond.
That's exactly where it came from.
Oh, yeah? Oh, cool.
Yeah. When that band... when we started that band, we were trying to find the right, like a name that was like befitting. And I was just going to India at that time. And we had tried a bunch of different things. And I was chanting the Prajnaparamita and just reading it. And I remember it being like, gone, gone beyond. Oh. Yeah. And I was like, oh. And then when I told it to Danny, my bandmate, I was like, you know, one of the things I love about this is I'm a big fan of like chocolate covered broccoli, you know, like chocolate covered broccoli. You want someone to eat the broccoli, but you're like, eat this broccoli. And you're like, they're like, no, I hate broccoli. And you're like, well, eat this chocolate covered broccoli. And they're like, ooh, I like chocolate. And I was like, oh, this will be kind of like my chocolate covered broccoli. Like every time someone's like, I love Gone, Gone Beyond. I love Gone, Gone Beyond. I love Gone, Gone Beyond. Then I'm like, they just say, and I have so many people that are like, Gone, Gone Beyond. And I'm like, yeah, just keep saying it.
So it's really great.
It's funny because some people who are familiar with the Heart Sutra and like they're like, wait, is that what it's from?
Yeah. That's so great. Yes. So we met up, David and I, and David and Love Serve Remember, because a couple of years ago we started right in the pandemic. So it's now, boy, time flies. That's all I got to say, but it's a few years ago. We started the Soulland Music Series and that's how we met David. And he participated in it. He's close to many of the artists that are on the series. And now we have this project that I'm so happy that you did what you did, David, which is, so we have in, and maybe you don't know some of this backstory, which I will tell you and the audience. In 1972, when Watergate was happening, Ram Dass and I and Ramesh, who wrote with Ram Dass, Being Ram Dass, the memoir, Parvati Marcus, mother of my sons, and a couple other people were in an apartment in New York City when, right when this was happening, when, you know, every day they televised these incredible sessions in Congress around, you know, getting Nixon, kind of what's happening to Trump now. But actually, Nixon seemed like a saint compared to, you know, what the alleged crimes that he's performed. That's a whole other something that, but
every podcast.
Yeah, right. That we're not going to get into. But so that's what we were doing. And we were sitting there. Ram Dass had recorded a bunch. There's a station called, I think it's still there, WBAI in New York. I don't know if you're familiar. Yeah. And so they had talk shows and all kinds of different music. But it was really, really great. Again, I'm not even sure if it's still there or not. I think it might be. Anyhow, Ram Dass went on to the station and they just invited people to call him up, you know, ask Ram Dass a question or talk to him about something. So there was this, it went, I was on for a few days and it was just incredible the kinds of responses that were elicited from him via these people. And you know, this is, he had just come, we had just come back from India, actually. We came back in the middle of 1972. We'd been there since 70. And so we thought, wow, this would be cool. So we thought of a six LP vinyl set with a beautiful insert in a beautiful box. Wouldn't that be a great thing to do? So we started to do it, collecting all this material. One of Ram Dass's most favorite things. These are a few of my favorite things, which is a whole very meaningful song for me, was the Third Patriarch and the Great Way. And it is so very special. And so what everybody out there, David put music behind this piece. And it's, you could say the same as what you were just saying, David, about some chocolate on the broccoli there, right? It's what Krishnadas calls broccoli. Yeah, the music is the covers up the mantric medicine, you know, so people don't think too much about, is this real, is this not, what does a mantra mean? But, you know, you're just kind of riding on those waves, you know, which is the same intent here, I believe, that you had. So this is part of a anniversary set, Love, Serve, Remembered, Reimagined, that David and a couple of other the other guys, that John Pattern and who else is on this?
Imani. And
yeah, Imani. And
hey, Raghu, is the Love, Serve, Remember box set the box set from the Uncle Henry story? You know the Uncle Henry story?
Yeah,
I'm talking
of course
about?
I know it well.
Yeah, yeah. Is that that's the one that he was talking? Because that story is a really meaningful story for me. And every time I'm doing business or anything with anyone,
oh, for God's sake,
it pops into my head. And I'm like, Uncle Henry. I'm like, oh God,
that's so far out. Because do you know who Duncan Trussell is?
Yeah,
the podcaster. So he and I are good friends. We've been working on an audio book for like 5 years. Around the premise is the movie of me to the movie of we. So we used ourselves as examples of all the crazy neurotic bullshit and habitual patterns, the identity stuff, you know, and how we act out during the day, like most of us, centered around, you know, the lead character is us 24/7, is me, me, me. Anyhow, it just came out. It's, by the way, if anybody wants to take a look, that's movieofme.com. Just it's got some really fun stuff. Duncan is really funny, and we have a bunch of things in there that are, I think, interesting, especially during these polarized times. And one of the chapters was called Uncle Henry, because I brought it up to Duncan and everybody. Simply, the story is Ram Dass, we created this box set, Love, Serve, Remember, which was the only thing rational. Well, that's not totally true, but Maharaji did, Neem Karoli Baba did say to us, love everyone, serve everyone, and remember the divine, period. So this is our instruction. So that's what we named this thing, which became this endeavor that we've been on since Ram Dass moved to Maui in 2004-05. And it turned out to be, that's the name of the foundation, that's the umbrella for everything we do. So this Uncle Henry, so Ram Dass, he made it like $3.33 for what? 6 vinyl albums, a big box, and a really beautiful insert. So his father said, wow, that seems cheap. And Ram Dass said, well, you know, tell me something. I know you did legal work, his father was a lawyer, for Uncle Henry. You know, what did you charge him? He said, what do you mean, what did I charge him? He's family. I didn't charge him nothing. Ram Dass said, the famous line, everyone is my family. And that's what you think about all the time. I think about it all the time too, because of the transactional nature of us being in the world. And maybe not quite as enlightened as Ram Dass did get. And I don't mean enlightenment, I mean just woke. He woke up to the reality we are interconnected and so on. And, you know, this is the guide star that we have, which is pretty great. So that was the story around Uncle Henry. And you doing this particular, okay, tell me what attracted you to this third patriarch, Great Way.
Well, you know, when Ram Dass passed away, I had a relationship with him when he was alive. I'd, you know, met him several times in Maui and, you know, got to go to some talks and you got to go over to the house. And Vishnu Dass, I was living with Vishnu Dass in Maui for like 6 years.
Oh, really? Oh, I didn't know that. You never told me. Wow.
Pre-Vishnu Dass when he was Ubi. and so I had this relationship with Ram Dass, but it was at a distance. And as a, you know, a spiritual seeker myself and being Jewish, I just had a kinship with him. Like his humor really touched me. And the way that he would explore insights and his spiritual seeking, that just felt very brotherly to me. Mm. But I didn't have that much of a relationship with him. And then he died. And shortly before he died, I had gone to a film screening. I can't remember what film it was, but I just was like, oh my, I'm like, wow, I never saw old videos of him. I knew him when
Becoming Nobody. That was it.
That one, Becoming Nobody.
Yeah.
And I had met him post stroke, and most of the things I had listened to of his were post stroke. And I just didn't have.
Were pre-stroke, no? Pre-stroke.
Post.
Post, really?
Post, because I met.
Less of post than pre.
Well, yeah, because I met him in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And my introduction to his work was mostly through the book, was through Be Here Now. So my relationship to him was less about like videos, texts, recordings. My relationship was an older man that I had met of few but very punctuated words and a book. That was my relationship to him. I didn't really watch a lot of videos. Mm. In fact, I remember at the time when I watched Becoming Nobody, I had the distinct memory of, I actually don't think I've heard him as a younger man speak.
Mm. Wow.
And when I did, I was like, I want to listen to everything he ever recorded at the earlier parts of his life. Mm. So I went down a crazy rabbit hole, and then shortly after that, he had died. But in that period, I had listened to this talk that he had given speaking about the Maharishi and, you know, when he was-
Maharaji, you mean? Not Maharishi.
I think of Maharishi when he was passing away.
The Beatles guru. Yeah.
Okay. Ramana Maharishi.
Oh, Ramana Maharishi. Okay. Yeah. Big difference to the Beatles.
Difference, yeah. Yeah. So when Ramana Maharishi was passing away, you know, his followers were like, heal yourself. Like, and he was like, where do you think I'm going? Like, I'm just dropping my body. Like, and kind of like, you're welcome because I'm actually going to be even more accessible to you now if you can find the pathway to me. And I just, that was a very interesting thought for me. When he died, I had this like distinct experience of being like, I feel like I have, you're in my head now. Like I just, in my heart, like I just had this different relationship with him. And shortly after that, I had was listening to a talk and he had mentioned this, the Great Way, that text. And I was like, oh, what's that? And then in that recording, it was said, you know, he's like, actually, I did a reading of it. So if you want to listen to it, check it out. And I was like, oh, see if I can find that on the internet. So I hunted it down and it's not something that has like crazy amounts of listens to on the internet. And it is a deep esoteric text, which for me was great because I had been studying Taoism and Buddhism for many years and I hadn't heard of it. And the most resonant text for me has always been the Tao Te Ching. Mm-hmm. And a translation by Stephen Mitchell in particular, which I really like that translation because it's ancient texts and you're trying to make it modern and you're like, what the fuck are straw dogs? I don't know what those are. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. So anyway, I found a translation that changed my life. And
wow.
And it changed my life because it points to a way of being instead of telling me how to be. Mm-hmm. Or telling me what to do or how I should think or where I should, how, you know, it's more like, hey, you're a part of this river, the river's flowing and you can either push the river, which we don't suggest, or you could flow with the river and understand the interdependent nature of all things and how the objective nature of reality actually works. Mm-hmm. And then you can define how you want to have a relationship with it. But first, like, here's the framework of what's actually happening. And that, so I found that through Taoism. And then when I heard Ram Dass reciting this text, which is like literally like actually written out like 2 pages long. It's not like a long thing. It's like, it's pretty short. I was like, well, that's the most beautiful / impossible thing I've ever heard in my life. Like, the Great Way is neither easy nor difficult. You know, just to understanding the interdependent nature of subject object and of a way of being, of not grasping to even the idea that all dualities come from a one essence, to don't be attached even to this one. You know, like all the same things are like, well, gosh, if I could do this, that'd
be great. About those without preferences?
How having those without preferences? Yeah,
that's another thing Duncan and I went into big time.
I got such a,
what do you mean? You can't walk around without preferences. Everybody got preferences.
You're like, this guy is distinctly an asshole. Okay. And then my mom would always say, you have to love everybody. You don't have to like their choices.
Yeah, exactly.
But you love everybody.
Wise mom. Yeah.
Very wise mom.
Yeah.
Anyway, I heard, you know, when I heard that text, when I heard the text, Rago, I was like, man, this is amazing. And I heard the music and I was like, wow, I would love to make this more accessible to people. I would love for someone to be able to just listen to it once a day, you know, listen to it once a day, like I was doing. And because it challenged my entire reality and the way that my framework of reality, it's like, you know, if you listen to it and take and really search for the real truth and find truth in it, it forces you to engage with life in a different way.
Yeah, different perspective. And that's
like
a lot of
Henry's story.
Yeah. And that's a lot of what Ram Dass has offered to us and continues. We continue to share his work, is a new perspective that isn't so much of the me, 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 a little bit about what can we do for others. Like that, the one of the most penetrating things, I think, and there's a lot of great things in that movie, Becoming Nobody, is when he says, you know, when is what you want enough? When is what you need enough? It's much more interesting to serve people, you know? And because once you start doing that, you're just erasing that attachment to me, the attachment to preferences, you know? So it's quite a powerful point in the film. But you know what? We're talking about music here. That you... We've got to. We're now. It's a long track, so we're. I'm just thinking. We'll just play a few minutes of it, so everybody can get the exactly the breadth of what David's done. Here we go. Let's just play this for a few minutes.
The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinions for or against anything. To set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. When the deep meaning of things is not understood, the mind's essential peace is disturbed to no avail.
Well, that, when I heard it, David, I was really, I mean, because I worked on this all the way back then. Well, it's 50 years. I'm sorry. So that must have happened. And we put it out in 73. We worked on it in 72. That's it.
Yeah.
I was just happy that it got that kind of treatment. It will allow people to absorb the words in a way they might not have. And that to me, you know, music is everything to me, as I know it is to you. And so it just made me happy. And I thank you for putting that together.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And it's funny because it was a couple years ago, I had reached out and I was like, I have this vision. And we're like, okay, cool. Well, let's see how it goes. And then I remember I get a message from Mangala that's like, now is the time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, wow. And then speaking of like service with it, because it's 17 minutes, right? It's a 17 minute.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not which, a single. It's
a I know. She's like, we put it as one song. I'm like, technically it's three. So it's three separate pieces of music that I had composed for it. And I remember thinking, this is a lot. Like this is going to be a lot of work. And I'm like, but yeah, but what else would I rather be doing, right? Like, and I remember the way I felt listening to the text over, like I had to listen to it like 300 times.
Oh, really? So,
yeah, because I was scoring it, you know what I mean? So like, I have it, like it's, I want it to get, it's still not to a place where I can feel every part of it all the time. But you know, it's like it makes me think of this Ram Dass story where this person came to him and they were like, had gone to all these different lineages and they go to him and he's like, she was like, I'm a seeker. And he's like, you ever try being a finder? And with something like this and working on it and being of service, part of me, like my spiritual ADHD that like wants to try this and I want to try some this and I want to try the, some Gnostic wisdom. Ooh, let's go for the Sufis today. And then let's see what's over here. And I think it takes a lot of
discipline, of which I would say probably is my personal kryptonite.
Oh, you're the only one on that.
For me, it's just rough. I'm like, how do I work on this over and over past the point of where it's hitting my novelty, the novelty factor, you know? So listening to this thing 300 times to get to where it's a finished 17-minute piece, it took me really deep into it.
Oh, that's so great. Wow.
And I do think that even if you are you're just discovering that maybe reality isn't what everyone told you it is, and you're like, maybe this podcast is the first thing you've ever heard somehow or another, and you're like, the third book of what and the great who, and you're like, and you're just like, just go online and just listen to it. It's music. It's really low hanging fruit you know, it's like, don't go, I'm not asking you to go meditate in silence for 45 minutes. Just listen to music for 17. And see what happens.
Well, listen to the whole reimagined vinyl.
Listen to the whole thing.
Yeah, and I do want to give credit. We mentioned Amani Friend and Liquid Bloom, and he did a great thing, and so did John Pattern. And so we thank everybody. And this will be available. Where we're putting a couple of the songs out as singles to sort of build it up to mid-December, when the album, you can pre-order it. Go to Ram Dass Shop and you'll be able to pre-order it, and which will be great. And we're really happy that this happened. You know, and these kinds of things turn out for us. Like, we have no idea. How did that come from? Where did that come from? You know, how do we meet up with people who are so simpatico with us in terms of sharing, which is really what Ram Dass is all about? He just wanted to share I've told this story a billion times. I'm going to tell it again because I don't think David ever heard it. But before Ram Dass left that year, I lived with him for some time, short time, in the summer before he left. And one day, we're just sitting around, you know. I mean, I miss that sitting around, let me tell you, David. I said, you know, Neem Karoli Baba told you not to talk about him when you went back to America. That's all you did. And it became Be Here Now. What's up? And I was a bit jiving him, knowing, you know, it was all perfect, of course. And so Neem Karoli Baba knew that, I mean, without knowing, not a knowing kind of way. And Ram Dass said, you know, I had a precious, precious jewel. I could do nothing but share that. I had no choice. I could only share that. I mean, no matter what. And that's what, is the legacy, really, of Love, Serve, Remember. You know, that he would put himself out of, it's the moment out of the picture. The moment I first saw him and met him in Montreal when I was running this radio station, I was a program director of a rock and roll station way back when. And I got to see this guy, because they had sent me over. They wanted me to broadcast some support promotion for what he was doing in Montreal at McGill University. And I went over to see him, and we just connected, you know, eye to eye. And it was just, there was no Richard Alpert and no Ram Dass. We were just in this wonderful pool of molecular interconnection. And all I felt was, how can you help me? You know, I mean, it was all about me. But nobody had paid that kind of attention. And you know how important that is, paying attention to somebody? I mean, it is paramount, like, generosity.
I think it's the greatest gift that you can give anyone.
That's what Simone Weil said, by the way. Do you know that writer, French writer? The greatest gift, because you just reminded me, the greatest gift you can give another person is complete attention, which is that generosity of spirit. And and he really emblemized that.
Did I ever tell you my story the first time I met him?
No, please.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what our time's like. It's pretty funny. So I was, it's 2009 or 10. It was at the very beginning of my music career. And it was the first time that I had actually flown over anywhere to play a concert. And that was in Maui at this small festival called Source Festival. And it was on the kind of North Shore-ish of at Camp Kanai. And 250 people or so, right? Anyway, everyone's really excited because Vishnu and this woman, Stephanie Farrago, Stevie, had got it so Ram Dass would come to give a talk, which was a big deal, right? Because this was a small, like, little hippie festival in Maui. So they wheel him in, and it has been raining hard, like hard, like Maui, like rain, like tropical hard. And he's in there. I had been up all night, and this was during my much larger psychedelic exploration phase. So I had been up all night on acid, and I came in and I was just like beaming, glowing. I'd moved back from India about a year and a half before that. And my music was really starting to be received in a good way. And so I was just really joyful at that time. And definitely still in an elevated space. And it was a really small gymnasium where we were. So I'm like 5 feet from him, like right in front of him. And there's like, you know, 50, 60, 80, I don't remember, people kind of behind me. And he's in, and it's like thunderstorming. And he's just sitting there just smiling, right? His biggest smile you've ever seen in your life. And I'm sitting there, matched smile, like right in front of him. And he's sitting there like, and there's no talking or anything. And his presentation starts. And everyone quiets down. It's raining and thunder outside. And first thing he says is, in this moment, it's like a 30-second pause or so. And then he repeats really slowly, in this moment. And I'm sitting there like, yeah. And everyone else behind me, see, this goes on for like 5 minutes, like or arguably uncomfortably long amount of time for many people, right? Mm-hmm. It was just in this moment, like with intensity and joy. And I remember sitting there listening and looking at him, and I was like, that's it. And everyone else behind me was like, in this moment, what? In this moment, what? Give me something. Tell me what I need to know. Tell me what I want to know. I want to know in this moment that what? Tell me about this moment. Describe this moment. Give me something. And I remember inside in my heart, and I was like, that's the whole deal. That's the teaching. That's the end. That's the advanced course. This is it. And he gave a beautiful talk after that. But I remember there, because it went on for so long, that I was like, if I could just get back to that, not the description of that, not the reasons, oh, I did this and I did that and I'm this, I've achieved that. I've all the blah, blah, blah descriptions of mind. And if we could get back to in this moment it's raining, in this moment I'm smiling, in this moment you're listening, none of that, just this moment. And I remember it changed my life kind of forever. And I was like, that's my dude. In this moment, period, end of talk.
it's amazing how all this stuff works, you know, for each individual. You know, it's just it's extraordinary, because what you're saying, I've said you know, and the reality of us in the West wanting the kind of textbook instructional on how to, achieve enlightenment. We have no idea, you know, and I always say, wait a minute, you didn't go there. How about just starting? How do we become a little bit more caring, kind, and compassionate? That would be extremely enlightening.
That would be a great start.
Yeah. You know, so.
Yeah, if you could just take that as a great first step, just be a little bit nicer and more loving and more caring and more listening and compassionate and understanding. And
yeah, which Ram Dass had all those attributes. I mean, he was not an enlightened being. He never said he was a guru. He's certainly a teacher. But those particular attributes really resound with many, many people. They're honest. He was not bullshitting himself or anybody else. And whenever he did, he'd call himself on it. He used to say, you know, when I get these dark thoughts, you know what the first thing I do is I go, how did I get here? And
yeah, they happen.
And I love them. He used to say, I love them to death, you know, which is tantamount to some of the Tibetan practices that our Lama Tsultrim, who we just did a retreat with a couple of months ago, she wrote this. By the way, this is a phenomenal book for people, which is Befriending the Demons. That's not what it's called. But Lama Tsultrim, T-S-U-L-T-R-I-M, Alioni, A-L-L-I-O-N-E. And I only do that in the middle of all this if I'm serious that this has been such a helpful practice. Because what it does, it allows you to relate with the darkness and the compulsions and the addictions and the things that we absolutely excoriate ourselves about. We judge every damn little thing, and this allows us to bring them in as family, you know. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, even in that great, in the great way, it says, you know, accepting some of those things is actually identical with true enlightenment, is what it says, you know. Or, they are, you know, those things are parts of ourself, you know. I hear so many people that say, like, oh, including myself in the past, it says, like, I'm going to kill fear. I'm going to get rid of fear. I'm going to conquer fear.
Yeah.
And I went.
Or push it away, which is
push it away.
The other side of the coin.
My friend Kristen Ulmer, she, you know, I was doing some work around fear with her. She's like, well, what is fear's job? I was like, well, fear's job is to keep me safe. Right? Like that fear is trying to keep me safe. She's like, okay, so how do you think it feels if the part of you trying to keep you safe is you're trying to get rid of it because it makes you feel uncomfortable? I was like, ooh, probably not good. I probably should accept and allow my dark thoughts, accept and allow my fears to just come, like Ram Dass said, come for tea, but you're just not welcome.
Exactly that.
So
yeah, exactly that. Yeah.
Just, come and go away.
Yeah, I remember, gee, when he first came back from India, and I, you know, that first talk that they sent over the radio station I listened to had that in it. That, boy, that felt great. Yeah, I don't have to push that away or be scared of it, whatever the thought is or the emotion. And the book, by the way, of Lama Tsultrim is called Feeding the Demons, and that's the T. Come on in, have a cup of tea. We're going to just hang for a minute, but then you might have to go.
And then you got
to
go.
So,
well, it's an interesting time. You know, a close friend of mine decided to leave his body last week.
Oh, and my, David.
And he was one of the most joyful, loving guys I had ever met. And, you know, when I think about our mental health, actually, especially post COVID and not having, I think a lot of people just kind of brushing it under the rug that this incredibly traumatic thing just happened to the planet, and that our demons don't just go away, or, you know, mm-hmm. our trauma doesn't just go away if you just ignore it. And that's like, you know, to address what you were saying, it's like accepting and allowing doesn't mean spiritual bypassing, and it doesn't mean brushing it under the rug. Yeah. It means like, where are some of my dark thoughts coming from, and sitting in an uncomfortable place and saying, and also reaching out to help for when other people are having a hard time, which I've had myself, where, you know, when I get in, my dark thoughts take over, and I get into an existential crisis, you know, once every 6 to 8 weeks at this point, where I'm like experiencing the suffering of our world and experiencing the challenges and adversity and like the lack of clean water and hunger and the overwhelming things that like, it can go back to actually finding like some of these texts and teachers and finding love and compassion, and also that like, that what we're talking about here and like the dark thoughts and all of these things are like this very normal part of being a human being. And that there are tools and resources and texts and teachers and people that are there to support each other when they're going through those challenging times.
I think you know who Jon Kabat-Zinn is, right? Mm-hmm. One of the leading voices around mindfulness. I just saw something that was so great. He said, one thing when this kind of stuff that we're talking about takes one over, you know, all the way to trauma or to just day-to-day random dark bullshit that happens to us, we just fall into. He said, silence. Just be silent for a moment, and that will lead you to presence. And from that presence, your perspective will move out of the attachment into all of, and the judgment for whatever the dark stuff is. So it's a good tip, eh? Just stop for a moment. Close your eyes and just hang for a second. And if you want to go a little more further, Ram Dass's thing of loving awareness, just repeat, loving awareness, I am loving awareness, and breathe into the center of your chest, the spiritual heart. Move out of this judging me, which is why we did the movie of me to the movie of we. It has all this kind of prescriptions for moving. And it really is effective. You know,
Ram Dass, I'm loving awareness. That one really... You know, and it's interesting, you think about that phrase too. I was really introduced to that through East Forrest's version of that.
Yeah,
did. You know, and that actually, that's been a mantra for me. Really challenging times. And it's funny, it was delivered through music in a way, right? Like, it was like made accessible through that piece. Now, I am loving awareness, and such a simple thing.
Yeah.
It's so effective.
Yeah. Well, listen, all you guys, you know, the guys that are on, Amani and John Pattern on this record, and yourself, what East Forrest has done. I mean, there's been so many people who've come to the table. I must give credit to our friend at Glitch Mob, Justin. And he was the first one to pick it up and give us all of the ammunition to go, wow, we should talk to some more people. But what you guys are doing is absolutely connecting people through music to these perspectives from Ram Dass and others, you know, and other teachers that we represent or that we've been friendly with for so long. So, yeah.
They're timeless. Yeah. Lineage, like, right, like we're talking, the text that I worked on is from the year like 550 AD. So you're like, okay, still works, totally plays. You know, more difficult. I was in Northern India last year. I got to work with His Holiness, the Dalai Lama.
Oh, wait, tell me about that. You never mentioned that ever. Well, we only
talked once before. I got an opportunity to go work. My friend Katie Seeger took a group of us to work with Jinpa, who is His Holiness's translator.
Yeah, I know.
And so Jinpa has been working on the Compassion Institute.
Yeah.
Is helping, whether it's like police academies or anyone, everyone could use more compassion training to understand what compassion is, because I don't think we actually have, we think compassion is empathy, yeah, but that's yeah. not what it yeah. is. It's right. So we don't really have a framework when someone's like, be more compassionate. You're like, okay, be more empathetic. You're like, that's not what compassion is actually. You know, compassion is empathy plus action. So yeah. It's a different, so we were working with Jinpa to help understand what is compassion mm-hmm. and how do we bring the Compassion Institute into other, organizational structures from businesses to, you know, kind of like a 4-day think feel
yeah.
experience when we went up there and I got a chance.
Dharamsala, right?
In Dharamsala, yeah. yeah. And while we were there, you know, we were spending a lot of time with several different Rinpoches and getting like some really, really unique intimate quality time with some of these just unbelievably brilliant monks, including Jinpa, who is like, and you know, he's just incredible. Yeah. Anyway, while I was there, I was like, hey, Rinpoche, I have a question. I'm having a bit of a hard time with this one. I'm feeling very torn because I don't know if it's actually possible to achieve enlightenment and not be a monk. Like, is it actually, is it of all of my studying, I understand I shouldn't be attached to the idea of the enlightenment. I shouldn't be striving towards it. I understand I should be learning how to become more compassionate. And I understand some of these frameworks that make me a more loving human, loving to nature, loving to everyone. I understand I have anger. I understand I have jealousy, but like I'm trying, right? And I'm efforting through all these ways, but I'm feeling like is it even possible at all? Like, just give me anything. Like, is it possible? And I remember him saying, yes, it's just much harder. I was like, oh God. Because it's really hard.
This is Jinpa saying this to you?
No, this is one of the Rinpoches.
Oh, one of the other lamas. Yeah.
One of the other. I'm blanking out on which one said it. Because I was like, well, should I become a monk? Like, or can I like make music and make art and travel and go to restaurants? Like, is it possible for me to actually mitigate my desire and the suffering in the world that I experience if I'm still pursuant of the things that many people pursue in life that are enjoyable and pleasurable? You know, it's pleasurable to go to a nice restaurant. It's pleasurable to go to a great concert. It's pleasurable to go visit Hawaii. But those things cost money. Well, if I need to earn money, I have to do things that sometimes create imbalance and suffering. So how can one operate from the Uncle Henry position of like, I'm going to treat everyone like family. I'm going to I'm going to try to give, even though it doesn't feel like I should right now. I'm going to try to understand, even though I think you are an asshole, you know, like I am going to like, can I get there? And I remember them just saying like, yes, but it's going to be tough. So like, we'll just give you some hard tools. Right. Yeah.
And did you meet His Holiness?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
He's, you know, I had a fascinating experience meeting him. Leading up to the meeting with him, I think it was important for me to understand who he is as a person and the context of our meeting. The context of meeting His Holiness now as a global political figure versus meeting a previous version where you're meeting his relationship to the world is different now. Right. And so there was the part of me that met him when he walked into the room and I was just like, I cried, smiled and was like, wow. That's a different experience of a different being. Mm. And then we got to ask him five questions. And I think in my heart of hearts, my first initial reaction was that I don't even know if you're allowed to answer the questions we're asking, because like you saw what happened to the whole controversy thing around afterwards. And I was just like, this is so ridiculous. Like, this is like, you're like people and the culture and the climate of our world are just looking to hate on anyone for anything and mm-hmm. anything that's just bringing a little bit of more light and love. And look, everyone has their challenges and faults. I'm sure he's not immune to those either. Maybe he is, but I remember thinking in our group with him, my mind it brought me back to my Ram Dass thing in this moment. He would say something like along the lines of, we're all brothers and sisters and things like that. And my mind wanted more. And I was like, give me the answers. People are, one of the questions was, our children are feeling depressed and not considering having children of their own these days. What would you advise we tell them to be like, to be inspired about this world? Kind of we're all brothers and sisters. And I'm like, okay, that's kind of a non-answer, but like, I remember unpacking because it was such an emotional experience to be present there, but my mind was unsatisfied. Mm. And I started thinking, why is my mind unsatisfied? What about me is unsatisfied in this? And I remember thinking, there's this great Aldous Huxley quote that's familiarity breeds indifference. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think back to a time where I didn't have access to texts. I didn't have like ancient texts. I didn't have access to the Yoga Sutras, to mm-hmm. the entire list of every asana that was sacred knowledge for yogis for many years. You had to sit at the foot of the master to learn one asana to make sure that you were ready to receive more information, because it wasn't just like, here's all the information and I'm going to expect you're running human operating system version one to be able to comprehend the fundamental reality matrix that it's not possible. But that's not where we're at now, right? You can just download any book on anything. And I've heard we're all brothers and sisters a million times. Yeah. I think there was a part of me that was indifferent to that, because I was like, I already heard that, but is that how I act? Absolutely not. I don't act like the people that are my enemies are my brothers and sisters. I feel very angry at them.
This sort of goes back to the experience you described being with Ram Dass, where he just, this moment, and everybody behind you going, okay, wait, well, give me something. What the fuck moment? Okay. But then it also made me think of what the exact same thing that you went through in this description of being with the Dalai Lama happened to Ram Dass with Neem Karoli Baba. When he said, okay, he had all these Buddhist friends, they were getting secret mantras to take them into, deep absorbed tantric spaces and so on. He wanted the esoteric teaching. So he said to Neem Karoli Baba, can you give me, I don't know if he said a mantra to get enlightened or a method, I don't know. But Maharaji, we called Neem Karoli Baba, said, feed everyone. Ram Dass is like, in his head, did the same thing that you were doing. It's probably a lot more acerbic, going, okay, this is penny ante bullshit. What? Feed everybody.
Feed everyone.
I need a method. What the? So he was dumb enough, Ram Dass, to actually do it again. He said, well, how can I raise my kundalini? Thought he'd ask it in a different, more classical way or something. And Maharaji said, oh, love everyone. And he then knew he was defeated, and he knew, and he saw his mind and his grasping and the whole nine yards of it. And fortunately, especially after his stroke, all of that stuff kind of dropped away. I mean, it was dropping away for many years and decades, and he was who he became to be. He became what he was pointing to in Maui after he got sick and almost died in 2004 after he had been in India. And at that point, he completely started to absorb the reality of what Maharaji told him the 50 plus years before. Love everyone and feed everybody. And he really did get to a place that, I mean, you know, we who were with him a lot and knew him from all those years ago saw the reality from which his vantage changed. You know, he absolutely, every individual that came anywhere near him, he gave full attention to and just absolutely created a pool of unconditional love. He really did that.
Why do you think that, I mean, I guess on the one hand, I'd be curious, like, why you think that that happened to him in particular? And I wonder if there is some correlation with, like, it's like how many people know things are good for them, but they are not able to do them. You know, for someone who is such a brilliant speaker,
to lose, like, that.
You know, to lose that, and you know what? I think, I mean, when I would listen to him, sometimes he'd be like, ironically, I'm supposed to not be talking about this at all. Basically, you know, those who talk. Don't know, because those who know don't talk, kind of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or the first passage of the Tao. The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. All of that, you know. And he's like, but here I'm going to try my best to point at the moon for you.
But I'm curious. What happened? The stroke, you mean? Basically. You know, he, for a while there, he was like the movie Fierce Grace. So he termed this event Fierce Grace, and he said Guru had given him the stroke in order for him to transform. So he actually was, this was just before he moved to Maui. And when he went to India, there's a woman saint who was our Indian mother, who named Siddhima, who only left 5 years ago. And she had heard that he said that. She said, Ram Dass, Maharaji, Neem Karoli Baba, well, Maharaji, you wouldn't call him that. He's not giving you a stroke. There's no way. It was nature. And honestly, Ram Dass let himself go for a few years. And you can see it when you see the video. I just watched one yesterday, and I saw, you know, he allowed himself to not take care of himself. You know, he had high blood pressure, et cetera, et cetera. And he didn't attend to it. So she was saying, it's nature. What Maharaji gave you was an ability to have a, she didn't say it in such complex, not really complex, but in terms like that. She said, Maharaji gave you the ability to transcend the stroke, transform yourself. And that's what it's about. He didn't give you nobody giving you a stroke. This was nature, you know, his karma. So I used to say if I had 1/10 of the resilience and the ability to not be grasping at what I was before, and for him losing the city of him being the kind of speaker, raconteur, comedian, wise person, all wrapped up in one, gone. I mean, eventually, of course, he still, even though he could not execute by language many of the thoughts that he had, he was able to put them in short bursts, like mm-hmm. I am loving awareness. And that practice has been such an important thing for many, many people, you know, mm-hmm. that we've introduced it to, and he introduced it to. So, yeah, there's no understanding how he could handle. I mean, I knew how much pain he was in a lot of the time, and it was extraordinary. And then I'd call him just to say hi. You know, we spoke all the time because I had so much business to do with him. And how are you? Oh, great. Everything's just wonderful. I said, I know you're lying because I speak to your caretakers. And he said, oh, yeah, well, I got, and then he'd list the litany. I said, okay, TMI, I can't handle it. You know, I mean, it was extraordinary that he was able to really not be stuck in his body in the way that he was, you know, any kind of self-pity or any of that. Never. The biggest issue he had was it was hard for him to ask for help. He said, I wrote books. How can I help? I wrote a book. How can I help? Now, how can you help me is my next book, you know? And,
yeah, that's so that one was always the hardest thing, I think, though. And, you know, it's, I definitely know that the further I have gone down my path as someone who shares wisdom, that it has felt sometimes that it can be more difficult to ask for help, you know, which I think you see, that's why you often see like people, you're like, how did Robin Williams? You're like, or like, I'm like, what? Like, yeah. Or like someone like that. I'm like, how did that person not ask for help? You know, and like, how do we create this? It's, I mean, Ram Dass talks about it all the time, like the mental construction of who we think we are. Mm-hmm. And that could be, I am a teacher and I am respected, and people go to me for knowledge. And then we sometimes forget.
The golden chain of righteousness. It's the most difficult thing to transform. Ram Dass used to say, actually. Tough stuff.
Tough stuff.
As they said, it's tough stuff. Yeah, you.
No one said this was going to be easy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean the transformation of the me is very, very engaging work, shall we say? Yeah. And if it takes mostly people to get really unhappy with their circumstances or the way they think or the constant grasping, you know, and the preferences. You know, that's so great you did that thing. Everybody, I just got to say, okay, again, this thing is coming out. It's Love, Serve, Remember, Reimagined. It's a two-sided, imagine that. It's a piece of vinyl, which is so popular these days. And I know, David, you collect them. So that's another whole podcast that we got to do is, why don't we do a podcast where you can play some of the different things that you've collected over the years? Wouldn't that be a good podcast to do?
I'll just walk you over to this guy just, you know, as we're getting towards the end. I'm in the kitchen here.
Yeah.
But this is a...
That's so cool.
One of my babies here. That's 1904. That is from...
Really?
That is... the Victor 5, I think it is. And it's one of the first music playing devices ever made.
But you have a bunch of old vinyl too, don't you?
That's pre-vinyl. They're 78s.
Oh, they're 78s.
They're 78s. Yeah, they're the first, for those people who don't know, they were invented in 1895 and they stopped making them in 1955. And I have 13,000 of them.
Holy shit.
Yeah, and they're from everywhere in the world, from like the, you know, original blues, original... any music that was made around the world, I have a little bit, like, and there's some pretty obscure records in there.
Mm. Okay, I want
to
do this.
I run into the Beatles had one record printed in India. But
oh, really?
Yeah, but they're like $7,000 a record. Oh. I was like, maybe I'll find one in my treasure chest.
But yeah, really? No, not yet. It'll happen. It'll happen. But I'm serious. Yeah, I want to do this.
Old music,
David. And we got to do a podcast. And you,
well, yeah, because we could play
different. I mean, they're probably not. We don't have to worry about copyright. They're all public domain at this point.
It's funny you say that. I thought that, but man, record companies, they are relentless. I have some RCA records from like 1940s and I put them on YouTube. I launched this thing called the Time Machine because I was like, man, you listen to these records. It's so transporting. It's amazing what music can do. And,
you got done.
And then they took him down. And I was what? How did you? This is so obscure. Yeah. And they're like, apparently not obscure enough.
Yeah, really.
But we'll go into it.
We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. Well, it's so great to have you here, Dave.
Yeah, thank you.
Happy, it allows us to get to know each other a little bit. Well, that's why these podcasts are so great, for
meeting
and getting closer to people and who they are and what they do. So the Reimagine Love Server member will be just join ramdas.org newsletter and you will get information on the different things that we're doing, including this wonderful Reimagined LP. It's actually our first vinyl that we've ever put out through Solan Music. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you for your contribution there. So, everybody. Also, of course, that Feeding the Demons book, Lama Tsultrum, our guys are going to put it in the show notes. So, that is a worthy book in terms of helping people really to not run away from all of the horrors that we are experiencing these days, inner and outer. And another, and Duncan Trussell and my audiobook, The Movie of Me. So The Movie of Me to The Movie of We. Just go to Movie of Me. We start out with movieofme.com and then we figure out how to get to the we. And it's all available on Audible and iTunes and all that. So thanks again, David.
Oh, my pleasure. Look forward. There's more to unfold.
Yeah.
And I hope everybody, I hope you enjoy the piece of music, the Great Way.
Yeah.
And I would say it's nice to go look up the words for it so you can absorb it in different ways. And
Well, it'll be in the album. You'll have it.
Oh,
right
there. It's in the album. So when you go and get the actual album, you can have all the words.
Right.
And I would just say, for people who are listeners for the first time and for the 500th time, you will discover something new and how it applies to your life every single time. Listen to it. It's
absolutely. So, yeah. That's why Ram Dass was so, through all the years, he always went back to it. So there's a reason for that. Mm-hmm. So you're simpatico there, that's for sure. All right, everyone, this is Mind Rolling. Go to BeHereNowNetwork.com. And, of course, you see the show notes and everything that David is doing and linking up some other music that David has done through Gone Gone Beyond and Human Experience. And we shall see you next week. Bye-bye, David.
Bye, guys.